I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tanya Paul is our guest this hour, curator of European art at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and we're going to talk about the beautiful exhibit that's at the museum now through January 4, titled Of Heaven and Earth, 500 Years of Italian Painting from the Glasgow Museums. It includes paintings from the principal and artistic centers of Italy and Rome and Milan, Bologna, Florence, Siena, Naples, and Venice, and includes works by many masters. KP and I had a chance to go through the exhibit with Tanya yesterday, and she knows her art. She says the sumptuous exhibition presents the works of famous artists that even some art historians wait a lifetime to see. So we'll talk about those paintings and welcome your phone calls. The exhibit's been around for a little while, so I'd imagine some of you have had a chance to see it. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and I would like to remind you that we're also in our year-end pledge drive, so we would love to have your contributions to WPR at 888-820. You can remember two numbers at once, right? 888-202-2552. WPR.org is the way to reach us. And Tanya, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for
having me. We had such a good time yesterday.
It really was.
You know, and it made me think two things. One is, what a wonderful place of work it would be to be in the company of those paintings. And number two, I really wish I spoke Italian instead of English. We're learning a little bit of Italian this morning, just how to count, because it is so beautiful. And are you fluent in Italian? Or
oh, goodness, no.
No.
Well, to be a curator of European art, you need to know a lot of different languages. I'm fluent in Dutch and German, bit of French, but not Italian.
Well, you spoke it very well. And with the proper enunciation, too.
It's all about conviction.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what it said. That's why I like Italian. It's got conviction. So you were quoted as saying, some art historians wait a lifetime to see some of the pieces. Mm-hmm. So this is rare to have this. Some have never come to the United States before.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's very true. Most of the paintings have actually not left the city of Glasgow since they came into the collections.
Whoa.
And a lot of the paintings actually, for a long time, weren't on view in Glasgow. And then they did this, they did a major cataloging project of the whole collection of Italian paintings, 150 of them, and then really decided that we really need to work to raise the sort of awareness of these pictures. And the Titian in particular is a painting that it's really extraordinary. It's incredibly important in his oeuvre and his body of work. And in fact, there are a number of Titian exhibitions that are happening currently, and that painting, or those paintings, I should say, were requested for those exhibitions, and they're not there because they're here in Milwaukee.
Oh,
so it's a real treat.
Yeah, and the Titian we're talking about, we saw the Christ and the Adulteress.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Was he the one who was 20 when he painted that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Holy Toledo.
I know, hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
sure
really
is.
It's a masterful painting. But I love also that you really see him kind of being young and boastful in that work, mm-hmm. really trying to make sure that we can see exactly how talented he is as an artist, how well he can use color, how well he can describe surface texture, and how complex a composition he can create. Mm. So he's really kind of showing off in that way that we think of sort of younger people really wanting to do.
Yeah. So who was the person who collected all these fabulous paintings?
The primary collector, and there were a number of them, but the primary collector really who's responsible for Glasgow's Old Master collections is a man by the name of Archibald McClellan. And he was a coach builder in the city of Glasgow and amassed this fortune and decided to really try to do something meaningful with it. And so he started buying Old Master paintings, and he got to the point where he had such a huge collection that he actually couldn't keep it in his house anymore. And so he built this gallery space in downtown Glasgow. On the high street. And so when he died, he gave that collection along with that purpose-built gallery space to the city. And that donation really was sort of the basis for further donations to the museum and to the city's collection. Mm-hmm. So it was really McClellan who sort of started the ball rolling.
Mm. So it's looking at 500 years. Mm-hmm. We tend to look at the 16th century, right? The 1500s, when Michelangelo was around, is the real time of great, great art.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? That was the epitome of all of these centuries?
I think it is that it's one of the real high points, but I'm quite partial to the 1600s, to the 17th century myself. But I think what's really amazing about the exhibition, actually, and I've had to change my tune on certain fronts, because I wasn't always as excited about 19th century Italian painting, for instance. And this exhibition has really, and spending time with these paintings has really changed my opinion, because that's the amazing thing, is that as you walk through the exhibition, you see that that kind of level of creative sort of ability in with Italian painters just does not diminish. It shifts and changes as styles change, of course, but you really see that there's this consistent sort of creative approach that these artists have sort of across this massive span. Mm. But if I had to pick a century, I would definitely pick the 17th.
Yeah. Although there isn't any Michelangelo, because there's not much Michelangelo anywhere in the States, as far
no.
as I can tell, is there?
No, and certainly not for traveling. There was a painting that was recently purchased by the Kimball in Fort Worth in Texas. And that was a painting that was done very early in Michelangelo's life, actually after a Schongauer, a northern print of the Temptation of St. Anthony. It's impossible. These things just can't be bought anymore. They were either in situ or they're already owned by museums. Mm. They're just not, they're not to be gotten. Drawings are the only sort of moment where an institution could hope to buy something, but Michelangelo drawings are so wildly expensive that they're just not to be gotten.
When you were taking us through the exhibit yesterday, and thank you, we had a great time.
Oh, my pleasure.
You said that you stopped at one painting and said, because I think about you during the day, you're just sort of looking around at all of these paintings all the time. And one of the paintings had become your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the process of how one of these masterpieces becomes your favorite and why you chose what you chose?
And I can't remember which one, if it was the Guardi landscape we were talking about.
It was the
Fall of the Rebel Angels.
It was the young boy or girl.
Oh, Mancini. Mancini.
Oops,
yes,
who it is.
Okay. It's funny because it's when you ask me what my favorite is, it kind of shifts from week to week and day to day.
Does it?
That actually speaks to your question, which is, I think when you're planning for an exhibition, you have the catalog, you have the checklist, you have a sense of what's going to be in the show, and you have a sense of, I'm probably going to really like this painting. I know this work. I'm predisposed to like this. But then there are paintings that kind of sneak up on you, paintings that you don't expect you're going to like, and the Mancini was a painting that I sort of thought I would like, but then the more time I've spent with it, the more I've really come to just love it, because it's a 19th century picture. It shows this little boy sort of slumped down in an armchair, and you really see the degree to which Mancini is talking or looking at Manet, he's looking at Degas, and he's also looking sort of further back still to Baroque artists, and that interest in textural paint application and dark color. But I think the Mancini is just, it has a real sort of a verve, an expressiveness, a charm to it that it has grown on me in ways I did not anticipate. So,
which also speaks to, I've read an interview with you in which you talk about the importance of the museum experience. And I was talking with KP about this morning, that it's interesting. You see these works, and by golly, they stay with you. I mean, I can conjure up the images of them and the paint that was used and the colors of all of this.
Yeah.
There's something about the experience of spending time with something that's 500 years old that isn't what our society is about for the most part now, and it's a very meaningful experience.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm standing on a soapbox all the time, but I really feel like
you got one right now.
All right. Well, I really feel like it's so important, because we spend so much time on our phones. I mean, I'm guilty of it too.
Sure.
My whole schedule is in there, my friends, my contacts, all that sort of thing. But I think to actually go into a museum and to sort of consciously take your phone and put it in your pocket or your bag or whatever, and to stand in front of a painting and to give it even just 5 minutes of unadulterated looking. And I guarantee you, you will see things in that work that you, if you had just walked past and taken a picture, because I see a lot of people doing that. And I completely understand the practice. It's, you know, I was here, I saw this, right, I liked right. this, I want to look up more information on it. And that makes complete sense to me. But I also feel like there is something to be said for slowing down, focusing on something, and really digging into an object that is so rewarding in a way that our sort of faster paced way of approaching things just can't possibly be. I mean, we take things in a very surface way, and to be in a museum and to have that meditative time, that's one of the real gifts that I think museums can offer to people, I think, is a quiet meditative space. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I think museums are many things. We're places for families. We're places for, you know, people to come and meet one another and spend time together. So there were social spaces. But I think there is also a role for that sort of quiet experience as well, folded into all of that. And so we're many things for many people. Mm. But I love that opportunity to just really focus on a single
work. Yeah, very nicely said. Our guest this hour is Tanya Paul. She's curator of European art at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and we're talking about the really lovely and important exhibit that's at the museum of Heaven and Earth, 500 Years of Italian Painting from the Glasgow Museums. I'm sure some of you have seen it. We're talking about the museum experience, and this particular exhibit will focus on some of the paintings that are there as we continue with Tanya. And welcome your phone calls, too. We're interested in hearing from people who have seen the exhibit, or you might be particularly interested in this historical time of painting. It's a big history, 500 years. So we welcome your calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I do want to tell you that tomorrow, this was a guy I haven't thought about for years and years, but I'm so glad Matt Bai makes me think about him again. Matt Bai is with us. He, for many years, was a reporter and writer, political writer for the New York Times. He is the author of All the Truth Is Out, The Week Politics Went Tabloid. It's about Gary Hart, and Gary Hart being a man of substance, how the campaign, the way we cover campaigns has changed, how forthcoming candidates are has changed substantially, not for the better, and it's all because of Gary Hart. And he spent a lot of time with Gary Hart recently in compiling this book. It's really good. I to tell you the truth, I didn't think I would like it as much as I do, and there I was last night reading this book. And reading and reading and reading, and I'll finish if I can tonight. So please listen. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. I'm Kathleen Dunn with K.P. Whaley, dressed so fashionably today. I hope the picture is on Facebook. Is it?
Yes.
It is? Oh, come on. You're so shy. And he never has taken a bad picture. So we're putting his picture on Facebook because he's dressed so much in the season. We're in our year-end membership drive. This is your radio station. It's listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And during this drive, it's not a long one. It's your chance to make sure that we are set to start 2015 in very good shape.
And if any, if last hour's any indication, we are. We heard from 33 people last hour.
Did we really?
Oh, thank you all for your pledges. Our goal this hour is 20 pledges, so you can give to WPR to support the radio you enjoy. You can support Kathleen's show, and you can do that with your pledge of any amount, which will also enter you in to win two tickets on a WPR trip. You choose either Washington, D.C., France, or Alaska, and it's really a great reason to make your year-end gift right now. Your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 means your chance for a getaway of a lifetime and gets us one step closer to meeting the goal. So one step closer to funding all of the programs you count on right now at 888-202-2552.
I think you know that we love the work that we do. We bring you 2 hours of great radio from 1 to 3, Monday through Thursday, and We love what we're doing. We love to talk about it. When we're off the air, we talk about what's going on in the world. We talk about books we're reading and history and a little bit about sports and politics and education. KP and Scotty are terrific producers, and we're kind of made for the jobs that we do. Aren't we? We're lucky that we found what we like in life, and here's the job, and there aren't many of them. And thank you very much for letting us be here. But we're happy to be here for all of those topics. But we can't do all of this without your support. Listener contributions, I don't know if you know this, but it makes up more than 40% of our budget, which is a whole lot. And it's why we're asking for your gift right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Yeah, in this membership drive, you can also choose the limited edition 2015 WPR calendar as your thank you gift for a pledge of $120 or more. That's just $10 a month, and your pledge supports the programs, and you'll really love this calendar. It has great black and white photos of Wisconsin Public Radio history, and you can make your pledge now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and ask for the WPR calendar.
This membership drive, we're having a drawing for a trip of your choice to D.C., France, or Alaska. When you give, you're automatically entered. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard, or better yet, by making a pledge right now.
Make your donation in support of all of the programs that you count on, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or it might be $100 a month, we appreciate and we count. We really do count on your gift.
Yeah, you might think that you don't have the support, that you don't have to support WPR because somebody else is already doing it, and they are. But WPR has been around for years because many remarkable people like you have made the decision to support something that's important to them. So now really is the time for you to make that decision. Many first-time donors just give us $5 a month, but whatever you choose that will work for you is the right amount. So make your pledge of support. It's time right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've been around for almost 100 years. Isn't that incredible?
Amazing.
100 years.
And that's all in the calendar, these photos. From
almost 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, nice.
Pledge now, WPR.org.
Pledge now. Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you can count on us, right?
Yeah,
we're reliable,
so, right?
I guess. And we're a great value. You turn on the radio any hour of the day or night, and you hear something interesting, and you learn something new. That's what's terrific about this service. You get to decide how much you pay. Invest in WPR right now by choosing the amount that you want to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's really so easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month. That donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs that you listen to. So show your support, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and give just as generously as you can.
As we look ahead to 2015, we are grateful that Wisconsin Public Radio has strong listener support. One gift at a time, listeners provide our single largest source of funding. If you haven't given this year, we would deeply appreciate your special year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. We need 19 pledges in this hour, so the next 34 minutes or so. And again, as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552 enters you into a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. Sustainers, don't worry, we've got you automatically entered.
And a reminder that we have this limited edition 2015 WPR calendar. It's got photos of pioneers, and indeed they were pioneers in the whole business of radio, innovation milestones from the early days of WPR. So ask for your calendar. I like calendars. I'm sure you do too. When you pledge $10 a month, it's $120. WPR org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not already a sustainer, you can also become one now. It's easy to set up convenient, ongoing monthly donations that come directly from your bank account or credit card. You can do it so at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and become a sustainer.
Thank you, KP Whaley.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, 888-202-2552 is the number. We're spending this hour reflecting on what we saw yesterday, and I'm sure many of you have already had a chance to see. It is the Of Heaven and Earth, 500 Years of Italian Painting from the Glasgow Museums, which is currently at the Milwaukee Art Museum. And Tanya Paul is our guest, curator of European art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Feel free to join our conversation, too. I know we have a lot going on this hour, and phone calls are not from the top of the hour all the way through, but now would be a good time to call if you've been to the exhibit and would like to talk with us. We'd love to hear from you. And that number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Tanya, what were the paintings? There were two very large paintings. I'm not sure if they had been outside of the country, Scotland, before, but you said they were always shown together.
Salvatore Rosa, and there are two. He's a 17th century Baroque painter, and they indeed they've stayed together their whole lives. There was a brief moment
really?
they passed down in one family, and at a certain moment they went to two different children, and the children, but then they came back together, always in the same family,
huh.
And then eventually those children then left the paintings to the Glasgow collection. So yeah, it's extraordinary for pictures of that scale, and these pictures are
huge.
They're like 9 feet across. They're crazy. They have stayed together, which is unbelievable. I mean, even just the wall space to imagine where someone would have hung even one of those paintings is quite extraordinary.
And was that the room? There is a room that shows about restoration, that these paintings have to be restored.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
often do they have to be restored, and how in the world do you restore masterpieces like that?
Well, I mean, it's a whole specialized profession to be an art conservator, and that's specialized training, very much scientific based, and that sort of thing. Paintings get conserved on an as need basis. So you don't the whole sort of mantra behind conservation is you do as little as possible, and whatever you do should always be reversible because your goal is to preserve the object as completely as possible, so that it lasts as long as possible. Because I mean, some of these objects, as the exhibition implies, they're 500 years old or older, and so it's important to really take extra special care of them.
Right.
But conservation can be everything from cleaning to relining to all sorts of different approaches can be taken depending on the work and depending on what's needed.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are certain names that pop out when mm-hmm. we look at the list of the artists who are represented here, and I'm wondering why. And let's start with two of the Bs, Botticelli and Bellini,
mm-hmm.
both of which people would say, oh yeah, they were Italian painters, may not know exactly what century or what they've done.
Yeah.
Why are they so prominent?
Well, it's interesting, and some of that is sort of the vagaries of art history, which artists have been really focused on, but for the most part, for those two artists in particular, they were very successful in their own time, and their work very quickly became sought after, even in subsequent decades. And so, they were valued from the beginning, highly valued from the beginning, and that because the Italian Renaissance is a period that is so revered, that never really dropped off.
Hmm.
You have certain periods. The 18th century is kind of notorious for those certain periods in which people were not interested. You know, they reached a point in the 19th century. 18th century art was viewed as passé and not very interesting. But that never really happened with the Renaissance. And so artists like Bellini and Botticelli, who really were so successful in their own time and who created such unbelievable pictures, textbook pictures, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone who has ever taken an Art History 101 class will recognize these paintings instantly. I mean, these are paintings that are sort of part of our internal sort of Rolodex of images, as it were. You know,
mm-hmm.
things that immediately register, things that immediately are recognizable.
I thought the Madonna and Child, I don't know if that's the correct name, mm-hmm. was particularly beautiful.
It's an exquisite.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it's an exquisite picture. And completely classic example of his style, completely classic example of what Bellini was doing. And that sort of the thing that I love about that painting is that he did amazing large-scale altarpieces, but this is a private devotional picture. This would have hung in someone's home. This would have been a subject of real sort of daily meditative attention by whoever owned that painting in its very sort of earliest days. And I think the painting has a real sort of wonderful quiet beauty to it that I think really, really encourages that. It encourages you to spend time with it. It encourages you to look at it, and then you notice details like the sort of the way that Christ has that plump little belly, like a little baby boy.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's
really wonderfully observed, and yet the Madonna has this beautiful, soft, diaphanous veil, and yet her face has this very inexplicable sadness about it. And of course, we know she's anticipating what will happen to her son, but it's a really touching picture in so many ways.
You made a point of letting us know what things were painted on as we went through the exhibit. We moved from what to what, and what difference did it make in the quality of the art?
Sure. The earliest pictures are almost all painted on wood panel. It was simply the most available and straightforward support, we call it. And then during the 16th century, you really start seeing artists actually painting on stretched canvas. That becomes a much more accessible medium, accessible support, in part because what that allows is then the paintings are much lighter, and so you can paint on a much larger scale.
That's why
the Titian, which is such a large composition, actually works, because it's on, I mean, you can imagine a wood panel that size would be incredibly heavy. So canvas comes about as a sort of from a practical perspective. It's cheaper. It's more lightweight. And then one of the paintings that we talked about is actually painted on copper, which is a support that was much more sort of luxurious. It was very expensive, and what it allowed was a very slick, smooth, polished finish. And it also would have really allowed color to really take on this almost enamel-like quality to it. So copper was really a really revered surface. And of course, artists were painting on all sorts of things. There are no paintings on stone in the exhibition, although there is one in the Milwaukee Art Museum's permanent collection. But artists would paint on stone, like precious stone, like lapis lazuli, and then they'd incorporate the veining in the stone into the composition. Really extraordinary. So artists were always kind of experimenting in that sense.
Maybe because so much has been written, I'm back to Michelangelo. And Da Vinci and that particular time, we tend in books like The Agony and the Ecstasy, and a lot has been written about Michelangelo.
Sure.
We tend to focus on great art from Italy coming from Florence or coming from Rome. Have we been overlooking, I know Venice is featured in this as well, Bologna is there. Have we overlooked some of the other areas of great art because of all that's been devoted to Da Vinci and Michelangelo?
Sure. To some extent, certainly in the popular awareness and popular consciousness, absolutely yes. I think there is a greater focus on Florence, on Rome, and a little bit on Venice. But there are fantastic painters working in Naples, for instance, and Neapolitan artists somewhat lesser focused on. And that's part of the vagaries of art history. But it's also, if you take a step further back and you look at, for instance, the 19th century, when people think about 19th century art, they think of French Impressionists.
Yes, right.
But you have unbelievable artists working in Belgium, in Italy, and all over the place. And so, you know, we have focused, because that's just what is sort of in the popular attention, we focus almost so heavily on French Impressionism, but yet there is this much wider, much richer world, and that's actually the beauty of art history. There's always something new to study.
Well, why did the Italians, though, being dominant for so long, they kind of gave it up to the French with the Impressionists? How did that happen? Why didn't they just go on to something new that was really popular?
Well, you know, and that's a tougher question. It's hard to say. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it depends on where the money is, it depends on where where the sort of cultural richness is, you know, and so it there's a lot of factors that sort of play into why a particular school of art is more popular or becomes more popular, and mm-hmm. one wanes while one is sort of really coming into broader awareness. So it's a more complicated question and a much larger sort of historical picture that you have to step back and take, I think.
We continue our conversation, and feel free to join us. We may have so much going on that it's hard for you to jump in here, but I do invite you, particularly those of you who have seen the show. I'm sure if you've seen it, you would like to talk with us about it, because it's really quite lovely. Of Heaven and Earth, it's the exhibit. It's at the Milwaukee Art Museum right now. And Tanya Paul is the curator, obviously very knowledgeable and well-spoken about European art and this particular exhibit. She kindly took KP and I through got to be right with my English, through the exhibit yesterday. If you'd like to join our on-air conversation, please give us a call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is also, in addition to talking about the terrific exhibit at the Art Museum, this is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are in our year-end membership drive. KP Whaley is joining me. If you've put off being counted as a WPR member in 2014, well, now's your time to take action. And if you have given, or if you're a sustainer, now's the time to please make a special year-end gift. It takes just a few minutes, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. You can help pay for the programs like Kathleen's show that you depend on. We're looking still for about 16 more pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. So when you give, you'll be entered into a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip of your choice as an added incentive. That means a pledge of any amount is your chance to enjoy the very best of Washington, D.C., or a visit to France, or exploring Alaska. You make your donation now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed. We keep you entertained every day. You enjoy this program, Joy Cardine Show, Larry Miller Show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and many, many other programs. Support the exciting mix of shows that you enjoy with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like the pledge because you can decide on the amount that is right for you. Mm-hmm. Every pledge matters, and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you love here on WPR. And when you pledge, you can also ask for the limited edition 2015 WPR calendar. It features historic photos of WPR throughout the 100 years that we've been around. And it's your gift for $120 or more. That's a $10 a month pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you don't mind, let me also add, you can choose food for 40 for $120 as well, which will
which is great.
That donation will go to people who are hungry in the area in which you live. People who listen, you provide the most significant share of WPR's budget. So your donation comes with no strings attached. You can invest in programs that deliver the greatest value to you. It keeps independent public service radio on the air, more important now than ever, for you and for the entire community. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, can I help you?
Could I get two double cheeseburgers with extra cheese and mayonnaise? Oh, and add bacon.
Are you sure? Do you know what those calories are? Not to mention the saturated fats in those processed foods?
Well, yes, I'm sure. And could you supersize the order? Oh, and I'll take the largest Coke you have.
Supersize? My goodness, and that large soda? That is a half a cup of sugar by itself. Oy. All right. I'm going to give you one burger, no cheese, no mayo, without the bun. You don't need those empty carbs. I'm going to add lettuce and tomato. I'm going to substitute fruit and carrot sticks for the fries and one large water. Voila! Here you go. Enjoy.
Yes, Zorba Pastor could work at a fast food restaurant. But isn't it better that he's hosting Zorba Pastor on Your Health? Your support makes WPR programs possible and makes your life a little healthier. Give now. Here's someone to tell you how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift might be I don't know, $10, $20 a month, whatever amount you choose is okay.
Anything.
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 We'll take it all.
Yeah, we will. Thank you. And we'll say thank you.
We will say thank you.
And we'll keep working.
You know, Kathleen, your show and WPR as a whole has a real reputation for quality and substance. And the contributions really have gotten us where we are today. So your pledge today will take this kind of strength into the future. Your dollar gives Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep that quality and substance going on and on and on. So pledge your support now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You probably listened to WPR all year, and you could donate the same way by becoming a sustaining member. Make the decision once. You'll make affordable contributions of $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish. And it's easy on your budget, cuts down on paperwork. It's all good. So don't delay. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. We've got about 15 minutes left in this hour, so please go give a gift to WPR through Wisconsin Public Radio back to the community, and you enjoy the radio. So many others do as well, so your pledge helps you and your community. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
15 more pledges and about 15 more minutes or a little bit more than that to go this hour. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Remember that you will automatically be entered in this drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. And sustainers, you will be automatically entered. You don't have to donate to enter. Just go to WPR.org for all of the details.
Yeah, and this pledge drive, we're offering something very special. Again, it's the limited edition 2015 WPR calendar featuring photos of pioneers, innovation milestones, and a lot more from the early days of WPR. You can ask for the calendar when you make a pledge of just $10 a month. That's $120 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My favorite comment of all of them from Carl and Marge from Waterford, who pledged and said, "We want to help." I love that. That's "we want to help." And we hope that you share their sentiment as well.
Absolutely. And I like Sandra's comment as well, saying, "Kathleen Dunn is my hero."
Oh, yeah.
Right? And if Kathleen is your hero.
I have no idea how that could be.
You're kind of my hero, too.
I'm still alive.
So yeah, support your hero. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And thanks, everybody. Thanks, KP, for all of your terrific work. And thanks for your pledges. They're important to us. We're talking about this wonderful exhibit at the Milwaukee Art Museum right now, and is somebody call who's seen it, would you? I know somebody is out there who's seen the exhibit, and you'd like to rave about it a little bit, and we'd sure like to hear you rave about it. Our number on air is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for your joining us on air. Tanya Paul is our guest, curator of European art at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and we're talking about the exhibit. We should give some details. It runs now through
January 4th.
I was amazed when we went through the exhibit how many students were there. There were all, and they seemed to be quite interested in what they were seeing.
Yeah, no, we've had a lot of school groups come through, and I think that it's because it effectively tells the history of Italian art in, you know, a suite of five galleries. It's sort of perfect that way. It allows a teacher to come through and really just sort of guide a student through the history of Italian art. So it's been well received that way.
Yeah, and I was listening to some of the teachers too. They seemed to be quite well informed about the paintings that everybody was looking at.
Yeah, and I did a lot of, and every curator does this with every exhibition, but I've done docent training for the exhibition, and we have a great education department who has really been working hard at all of that. So, so it's been a wonderful, I think it's a really great teaching exhibition in that sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Is it harder, Tanya, to do an exhibit that covers 500 years and so many different styles of painting on different materials and to keep all of that in your head? That's a lot of information.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. When I give tours of the exhibition, I sort of feel like I'm sort of sprinting through time because I'm jumping forward century by century by century. But it's interesting. I like a little of both. It's great to have an exhibition like this that's this sort of broad survey because I, like many curators, I have eclectic taste. I like a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to be able to, you know, from one day start with Italian Renaissance art and then work all the way up through the 19th century. So you have avant-garde painting right next to early Renaissance. But then, you know, sometimes it's great to have an exhibition that's focused on a much tighter subject. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, I think this has been, it's interesting this way to have this sort of broad sweep. Yeah. So
let's talk about Venice for a moment. There is a painting that's also, I thought, extremely beautiful. I didn't know that people took tours. I guess you had to have some money. You take a tour of Venice, in what century was this? And then you wanted, like, if you were wealthy, a really nice souvenir.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is the 18th century, so this is you're talking about the really beautiful Guardi in the exhibition. And it's all part of this sort of tradition of the Grand Tour, when all of these, as you say, tourists were sort of traveling through Italy. They were, you know, not only looking at antiquities, so wonderful sort of the Colosseum and all that sort of thing, but they were also looking at Renaissance masterpieces, that sort of thing. And so you have this this group of people who's traveling through, and they want to return, you know, home with something to remember it all by. And I mean, we nowadays we take home postcards and little tchotchkes and things that you buy at the corner store, you
right.
know. But back in the 18th century, you take home a painting, and whether that be a portrait. So many of these people had their portraits painted actually in front of landmarks. You know, there are many portraits of, you know, the famous sitter in front of Colosseum, or you know, you would take a view of a city that particularly meant something to you, and that's what Guardi is painting. This beautiful view of the Church of San Giorgio Maggiore in Venice. And so it's a very recognizable view. It's very clearly Venice. And it's wonderful because it is a pure landscape view. And this would have, you know, could have hung in someone's home
mm-hmm.
And been a sort of literally the definition of souvenir, a remembrance of the trip that they'd been on.
Yeah, it's a beautiful painting.
Yeah.
Just beautiful. And what about the influence of some artists on others? Were mm-hmm. there connections between the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th? Did they see people in the century before them that influenced them in some ways? Do you see that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, between the first and second galleries, the early Renaissance and high Renaissance, you see a very strong, there's a lot of Venetian work, actually, because that's what Archibald McClellan's particular taste was. And so you see Bellini is one of the first pictures that you see, the Madonna and Child. And then the next gallery over, you're looking at a Titian, and Titian actually trained in Bellini's, you know, workshop. So you have these sort of very direct connections, but then you also have artists like Domenichino in the 17th century, who's looking back to the high Renaissance, to the work of Leonardo da Vinci. So you have these very strong connections, and that's part of that very, we think of it as old-fashioned, but it's a very sort of, it worked, a workshop tradition.
Mm,
you know, the notion that you are learning from the style of your master, who was in turn learning from the style of his master, you know, and so there is a real sort of legacy and sense of tradition. So that's why these styles really have this kind of persistence and longevity to them.
And what about religion? It wasn't, what century are we looking at where deeply religious subjects were not as painted as often?
I think the 18th century is really where you start to see that come in. I mean, certainly in the exhibition, that's the first gallery where you start seeing pure landscapes, you see mythological subjects. But certainly, I mean, all the way up through the 17th century, the church is a major, major patron. And in the 18th century, it is, the church continues to be, but The issue is that there is a much wider patron base. So you have wealthy individuals who are now actually commissioning pictures. And so, and there's also the notion of the open market. And so you have artists who are working for a much broader clientele. So if your clientele is only the church or only individuals who are wanting to demonstrate their piety, then religious subjects, that's what's going to be painted. So it's a very strong sort of undercurrent in the exhibition, but it also, it's a pure reflection of what was happening during those centuries. So.
Interesting. And tell me about how this whole thing works. Do you call up Glasgow over a course of years or whatever to try to get them to have their exhibit, which was a big thing for them, for a lot of these paintings to never have been in
sure.
the States.
Yeah.
Do you offer something in return? We'll give you this if you give us all of these 150 paintings.
Yeah. Well, exhibitions are cooked up in many, many different ways. You know, the Kandinsky exhibition that we just had was a direct partnership with the Centre Pompidou. But in terms of Heaven and Earth, what we worked with AFA, American Federation of the Arts, who was working directly with Glasgow, who had just, as I said earlier, had done this catalog of all of their pictures and decided we really want to put our best Italian paintings on the road and sort of increase our notoriety. And so AFA works with Glasgow to develop the exhibition, and then they start talking to specific museums who they think, okay, we know that, you know, Milwaukee is a great market for old master paintings. And so as we in the curatorial department at the museum are really sort of building our exhibition schedule, and I mean, we work many, many years out. I mean, I'm working on an exhibition for 2018, 2019
are you?
At this Ooh. Point. So, I mean, we work very far out. So we try really hard to balance our schedule so that there's a little something for everyone, so that there are, and it's nice, there are often paradigm shifts. So from the next exhibition following of Heaven and Earth is going to be this amazing fashion exhibition.
Oh, which you're telling us. Yeah.
So this is it, and it's completely, you know, it's a total sort of shift in terms of the type of material and what's being presented. But, you know, that's what we like to do, because it really, I think it always provides people with something new and an opportunity to learn. And that's really what we're all about. Yeah. So.
And in terms of the museum, the renovation is taking place. Can you tell me where you are in that process?
Smack in the middle. we're doing really well, though. We're really, you know, we're going great guns in terms of the physical renovation process of the buildings. And we're going to begin with the addition soon. They're already sort of getting everything squared away for that. And we're, in terms of from the end of it that I'm responsible for and all the other curators, we've already begun very intense designs for our galleries. And so we figured out where the walls are going to be and where everything is going to go. But I have to tell you, it's the most fun I've ever had. It's one of the reasons I took the job in the first place. And yeah. it is so much fun.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you're so knowledgeable. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
We had a wonderful time, and it's just good. It's good to be able to talk about all that you do because it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite place in the city.
Well, and I do want to say, I mean, of course, the Milwaukee Art Museum is a great supporter of WPR. We really value the partnership we have with you guys, and I couldn't, you know, sort of exhort more enthusiastically that people really give, because it's this kind of community partnership is fantastic.
Yeah, it's important for both of us, I understand. Thank you, Tanya,
Thank
so
you.
Much. And our guest, Tanya Paul, curator of European art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. It's a great exhibit to see during the holiday season and through January 4. You will not be disappointed. It's very, very good. Pictures stay with you. It's good. Well, you know, this is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio.
The countdown has begun, Kathleen. The countdown has begun.
We just got a few more minutes here, so please, we need your support. We just have about 6 minutes, KP, and it's time for you to think about how much you've appreciated WPR programs in 2014. We have done so many shows. I mean, KP and Scotty have put together some remarkable, just think of all we've learned. Just talk about all that we've done. We've just done so much over the last year. So take your action at the end of the year as you reflect on what you've heard with your gift. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
That's right. We're only looking now for 9 pledges in the next 5 minutes, so
we
I think
can
we can do that. WPR, support the programs that you enjoy and rely on. And again, as an added incentive, we'll enter you into a drawing for a trip to France, Washington, D.C., Alaska, your choice. The pledge right now helps keep this program going strong, and you can make that pledge at 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying the conversation about the Milwaukee Art Museum wonderful exhibit that's there now with the director, the curator of European art at the museum, Tanya Paul. So we do these kinds of shows frequently. We always talk with the art museum about their exhibits. If you like this kind of cultural programming, your pledge keeps this going strong, and it enters you in the drawing for a trip of your choice. So make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You don't have to donate to enter. Just go to WPR.org for the details.
And while you're there, you can also make a pledge and pick up the 2015 WPR calendar with a contribution of $120. That's only $10 a month or more, and your donation will support the program that you count on, and you can also get this really fun thank you gift as well. Make WPR a part of your daily routine when you ask for this cool calendar of historic WPR photos, 888-202-2552.
Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. This is not a long pledge drive, so you've only got a couple days to pledge to our program, the year-end membership drive. Your gift, $10, $15 a month, whatever amount is okay for you, it's okay for us.
And you can also make a much larger pledge if you want and join the 9XM leadership with a gift of $100 a month. Leadership's gifts are really critical in supporting the connection for you and others across the state. So keep it coming in, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Kathleen, we still need just about 8 more pledges to go.
Yeah, we can do that.
In a few more minutes.
Yeah, and thanks for all of your pledges. 8 more in just next 5 minutes or so. And we thank each and every one of you. Just a reminder, if you pledge any amount at WPR.org, 888-202-2552, we have that drawing for 2 tickets for a WPR trip. You can be like my mom. She used to win all kinds of prizes. She entered all kinds of contests. It was great. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're all automatically entered.
You can turn on the radio every day seemingly for free and enjoy hours of music, in-depth conversations, great entertainment, all the shows that you kind of listen and depend on. And those are very important for all of us. So become a member today, $5 a month, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much. Thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges. KP, thanks for all of the work that you do and for producing this hour. Thanks to Katie Mattson and Lisa Nalbandian as well. And that'll do it for us for today. Again, the number, pledge, it's the year-end drive, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Thank you very much. Great conversations ahead, and we'll have some terrific conversations tomorrow as well.